Mike centered it.
Going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Here it is. Put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get it going. It is Thursday, June 20th, and we're underway this hour on Flames Talk. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. When it comes to your business, knowing your property is secure is better than wondering who's getting in. Get peace of mind at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. It's Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts, and of course live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We're still reacting to the Jacob Markstrom trade from Wednesday morning. Kind of the big story in hockey in this city still. And it was exactly 2 weeks ago on June 6th when Kevin Woodley joined us like he does on Thursdays and kind of started us down the path and really started the, on at least on the outside, the ball rolling of, yeah, this thing is going to get done. It's probably going to be New Jersey, and it's going to get done in the next little bit. And Kevin joins us now from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com out of Vancouver on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Mr. Woodley, good to hear from you. It's funny, I texted you on Wednesday morning when this is all going down. Have you heard anything about Markstrom? You're like, I'm just crawling out from under a rock for the last 2 days. But now that you are back in the living, I would imagine you're not overly surprised that Jacob Markstrom is now a member of the New Jersey Devils.
No, I guess the only surprise is sort of, you know, and this is more on the Devils' side, is couldn't you have gotten this done well before the deadline and gotten an extra half season or two, you know, a third of a season and maybe a chance to not only maybe give yourself a chance at becoming a playoff team, especially in the Turtle Derby that became the bottom of the Eastern Conference playoff race, but also give him a chance to acclimatize, get to know his teammates, get to know some of their tendencies. Obviously, I would say the system too, but that's going to change with a new head coach in Sheldon Keefe coming in. But, you know, so much of adjusting to a new team, and it takes time, and you're going to have to expect that it will for Markstrom at the start of next season, isn't just the systems, because there's only so many variations, and getting comfortable with sort of, you know, knowing where guys are supposed to be within that structure. It's the individual tendencies behind it. And every goal is different, but, you know, I remember Ryan Miller telling me we're like 2/3 of a way through a season and just talking about a defenseman who was new to the team and how he had finally gotten comfortable reading off what he was going to do on certain plays. And, you know, there's a guy who, you know, had fought the game at a very high level for a very long time, and that's how long it took him to sort of process that and make it innate. So there would have been value, even if it didn't get you into the playoffs this year, there would have been value in pulling the trigger on this sooner. And, you know, giving Markstrom that chance to get comfortable with the guys he's playing with.
For the longest time, you know, going back to before the deadline when we had you on and we were talking Markstrom and the great season he was having, you identified the way New Jersey plays has the chance to be a really good fit for Jacob and suits the way that he plays the game. Can you go back into detail about why you felt for quite some time that Jacob's brand of goaltending fits the way New Jersey plays really well?
Well, there's two ways of looking at it, right? Like the teams that were sort of in the market, and interestingly enough, one of them pulled the trigger on a trade that involved the goaltender shortly after this one was done, were the Kings and the Devils. And the juxtaposition to me was the Kings were a great defensive team and the Devils were a bottom third, not bottom three, but bottom third of the NHL defensive team. And so in LA, the question was, do we get the most out of Jacob Markstrom when we're not asking our goalies to steal us games? And in New Jersey, they need them to steal games. And obviously bringing in Sheldon Keefe, they hope to change that. And I think one of the things he did best in Toronto was take a team, you know, correct me if you've heard this before, if it sounds familiar for the New Jersey Devils, but a team with a lot of young, offensively gifted players and got them to buy into defending better, making better decisions on the risks they took in the offensive zone so they weren't constantly giving up odd man rushes the other way, turning them into a team that leaned way too heavily on goaltending in Toronto to a team that, you know, frankly, let's say didn't need a goaltender, but made its goaltenders maybe at times look better than they were. And, you know, I'd point to the Jack Campbell contract that resulted as it as an example. So I felt that the Devils were a fit because they were a team that needed an acrobat. They're a team that needed a dynamic, athletic, explosive. They needed tough saves to be made more often than you should, frankly, if you're going to be a contender. And that will have to change for them, even with Markstrom in place. But beyond that, digging into the microstats a little bit, you know, the Devils were bottom three in the NHL giving up breakaways. Jacob Markstrom was one of the best goalies in the NHL against breakaways. Slot line plays, east-west plays. Devils were bottom third in that. I think they're in the low 20s ranking on that. Not somewhere you want to be because those are the most dangerous plays. And their goalies handled those plays actually okay. But again, strength of Markstrom's game, I think he was 11 of his 19 goals saved above expected were off lateral plays, and a lot of it was below the hash marks. He knows how to work in and off his posts and go, you know, side to side so well, and that's something the Devils didn't get enough saves off of. So, you know, sort of on the macro and the micro, as much as there is no perfect statistical way to plug goalie A into Team X and guarantee it works or tell you for sure it doesn't, there were a lot of elements trying to do so that seemed to fit perfectly.
Do you, now that you look at the Devils, do they take a step for you in the Eastern Conference next year? Like, do they look like one of the more bona fide contenders out East, and knowing some of the metrics you look at and knowing that they have now added the goaltender they've coveted for so long?
Well, I mean, I think you look at it twofold. It's not just Markstrom, but they added Jake Allen and they've got another year of him. And that should permit you to get the best out of Jacob Markstrom because you're not going to have to lean too heavily on him. Right? And you saw it in Calgary when the minutes went up and the consecutive games started to add up. Sometimes the technical elements in his game started to slip. So having Jake there insures, gives you a nice insurance policy. It also, like, here's the other thing. I like Akira Schmid and I like Nico Daws. They were just asked to do too much too soon. And this gives them a little time to percolate. Whoever comes out on top of that battle in the American League probably moves into the backup role behind Markstrom next season, once assuming Jake Allen moves on. And Markstrom is not a bad guy to have as a mentor. If you want guys to learn, young goalies to learn about work ethic. So everything is in place, the pecking order, the ability of one of the young kids to come up if needed for a short-term or long-term because of injuries. Goaltending looks great. At the end of the day, though, are they going to take a step and be an elite team in the Eastern Conference or a contending team in the Eastern Conference will kind of depend on the first answer. Like, you can get into the playoffs as a 22nd or 23rd ranked team in the NHL defensively and giving up, you know, 24th, 25th most high danger – or, sorry, worst high danger chances in the National Hockey League, but you're probably not going to be a contender. The top-end teams – are always found at the top end of 5-on-5 expected goals against high danger. And we're seeing that in the playoffs right now. Edmonton was, you know, maybe surprising some people, but Edmonton was a top team in that regard after the coaching change. Florida has been a top team in that regard. And so what I think is there's still work to do. The pieces are there. Can the new coaching staff get them to play a way that's actually going to work once you get to the playoffs? The pieces there with Markstrom are certainly there to get you there, but will it matter unless they start to play a better brand of hockey in front of him?
Kev, Aaron here, and that's the perspective from the New Jersey side. Curious about your thoughts from the Calgary side. Conditional first in 2025, Kevin Ball, what do you make of the return Calgary got for Jacob Markstrom?
I won't pretend to know much about Kevin Ball's game other than what I read after the trade was completed. So, you know, I've heard everything from can be a second pair guy to on a good team, he's a third pair guy. And I would trust others with that assessment more than I would myself. I, you know, not sure I could walk into that room right now and spot him without a name tag behind him. So in terms of the first round pick, I guess the only thing that I wonder about is, and I've heard others wonder this too, is if you're retaining, was that what got you from a second and Ball to a first? Or should there have been more for the retainment aspect of it? Because you typically get an asset if you're retaining salary. And I mean, like for the Devils, that's the other part of this. Like, it's not just getting Markstrom, but you're only committed for 2 years. And his salary cap hit of like 4.125 is going to be what? 21st, 22nd amongst goalies currently under contract for next season. Like, that's a bargain. And so, you know, I don't know, at the end of the day, the goalie trade market has been suppressed for a long time. And I think we need to keep that in mind before judging Craig Conroy on the return here. The only question I think others have asked it as well is, you know, if you're going to retain salary, should you get a little more? And, but I'm not privy to where that conversation started, right? If the retention was what got you up to a first round pick, then so be it. Maybe the offer was less than that. And, I think ultimately the comparison we're probably going to have to make will be once Linus Ullmark gets moved, mm-hmm. if indeed the Boston Bruins find a deal. And that will be the sort of, how does this look compared to what they got for Jacob Markstrom?
What do you make of Calgary's tandem as it stands on Thursday, June 20th, the combination of Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar moving into next season?
Well, quick question for you. Are you expecting or are we expecting Dan Vladar to be ready for the start of next
season? We are,
I'm
yes.
trying to do the math. Okay.
So basically, Kev, what Craig Conroy told us on Wednesday was that he was moving around really well before he left Calgary, was starting to do squats and stuff like that, and they're expecting him to be ready for the end of August, and they fully expect him to be ready for training camp is kind of the latest update on Vladar's status.
Okay. Now, so, and he just had one hip done, not bilateral, right? It wasn't
correct.
Both.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, I mean that all fits. Let's hope that those are front squats he's doing and not back squats. Otherwise, you know, have the Flames conditioning people call me and I'll share a few lectures on why back squats aren't good for goaltenders and probably shouldn't be a part of their program. I don't mind. You're going to need another body and a body you trust to play in the National Hockey League just because everybody does. Like, this isn't an indictment of what you have in the one and two spot there or 1A, 1B, however you want to divide it up. And I'm not sure if Oscar Dansk has signed an extension for next year as well, so if he's going to be that guy in the third spot. But inevitably, you need four guys, three you trust can play in the NHL, and one in a pinch who can. That's just the reality of today's league and how often guys get hurt. In terms of that, Tana, I think you're probably going to need to be a little patient just because there are going to be growing pains, mm-hmm. inevitably. But, I mean, I thought they got better as a team. Like, it wasn't great defensively looking at the numbers, looking at the statistics for the first half, two-thirds. I thought they got better in the final third of the season defensively, and the numbers started to back that up. And watching them live a couple times down the stretch, you know, they looked better defensively than what the numbers said, and then the numbers sort of started to catch up to that. So that's promising for both goalies because you're going to need a little support, right? Like, you can't ask these two guys to stop bullets in your teeth the way you did ask that of Jacob Markstrom at the start of last season. You're going to need to give them a little more structure they can read off. And, you know, as long as that trend continues, the uptick we saw in the defensive numbers at the end of last season, I think they'll be fine. But again, I from the outside, it's hard for me to get a feel for what the expectations are. And I think you do need to realize, like, there will probably be ups and downs. And I think having two guys you trust will allow them to go back and forth between the two. Jason LaBarber is going to be a busy man, right? Like, because you have to work with both guys and sort of manage new roles for both of them, increase roles for both of them, and manage their game, manage their bodies, manage their mindset, as they are both asked to do more, do things they've never done before, or at least in Wolf's case, in a league he's never done it before. And there might be some ups and downs that come with that, but you're going to be better for it in the long run by trusting these two guys to get through it rather than, you know, necessarily going out and trying to get a Markstrom-type replacement. At the end of the day, that might be the one thing I worry about a little bit is, you know, we see a lot of young guys come into the league and they've got that mentor who's been a number one. Jacob Markstrom had it when he was here in Vancouver. Jacob Markstrom provided it to Thatcher Demko when he was here in Vancouver. I think, and a lot of goalie coaches agree, that there's value in that, that there's importance to that for a young goaltender. Does Dan Vladar have enough experience to be that guy for Dustin Wolf? I'm not sure, and I don't know him well enough personally to know how he would sort of slide into that role. But that's the one thing I think you do have to keep in mind as you go through inevitable growing pains with these guys both thrust into, you know, like I said, bigger roles, and in Wolf's case, not a bigger role, but certainly in a league he's never been asked to do that role in before.
Kev, you kind of touched on it there, but with the ups and downs that are undoubtedly going to happen as Dustin Wolf goes through his first full season in the NHL. Would you be more comfortable with a more veteran, you know, NHL-tested tandem pair for Dustin Wolf as opposed to Dan Vladar, who's a little bit older but in the same situation a little bit as Dustin Wolf and trying to prove himself as a capable number one?
I think this is where having a goalie department that knows the personalities of both of them is so important. And I think it's also important that it's not just one person, right? Like, you've got a three-person department there. You've got Sigalette at the top to sort of overview things. You've got LaBarbera, who has worked with Vladar the most one-on-one. You know, and then also don't forget Mackenzie Skapski, who I believe is re-upped in Calgary and will be there again next season, who, you know, has done really great work with Wolf. Like, if you look at Wolf's game from the first year to the second, as much as it was like, okay, he's AHL goalie of the year, 2 years in a row, MVP the second year, there are actually some tactical things that change in his game. And that's why he took yet another step. And so he knows his game. He knows him as a person. And I think for me to say from the outside, oh, they need to go get this guy that has more experience that can be a mentor, like, I don't think that's fair. I think you got to trust that when you build the department, it's for that reason. So that the people with boots on the ground have a feel for, you know, whether that relationship is one that can help both of them grow into these new roles.
Kev, last one, I think anyway, last one on the Markstrom, Calgary, New Jersey whole conversation related to that. It's funny you bring up the, because as of right now, Oscar Dansk is a pending unrestricted free agent. Not sure if that's going to be a re-up situation with the Flames organization or not. I think, and Dansk has NHL experience, but I wonder, to your point, if they are going to go Wolf and Vladar, and that is the tandem they're thinking about, you're talking more about kind of that like a Chris Drieger and Eric Comrie, somebody like that. Is that more who you're talking about that you know can get the job done in the American League and can also get the job done in spot duty at the NHL level?
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was talking. Not somebody to replace, because I think Dan Vladar has shown you a fair bit in the couple of seasons he was there, especially, you know, before the injury started to affect his game. More somebody who you trust can come up, you know, like. When you needed Wolf, you trusted he was ready to make a step. Somebody that you trust can come up and play NHL minutes, because just the way it is around the league, you almost never get through a season with two, right? So more that type of role. And some of those names you mentioned, interestingly, like I've got a list of guys that I think have more upside that are sort of value plays in free agency. But I think most of them are going to be looking for an NHL opportunity. I think Chris Drieger is an NHL goaltender. I think he's an NHL goaltender who had a tough first season in Seattle on a team that, you know, frankly, just wasn't good, wasn't cohesive in front of their goaltenders until halfway through that first year. And by then, both their goalies were underwater statistically. And then he had the brutal injury at the World Championships. We tend to forget it was in the gold medal game towards the end of it where he completely blows out his knee.
Yeah.
You saw it in Calgary this year. I mean, he only had two starts this season. If I'm not mistaken, one was in Calgary in what would otherwise be a scheduled loss, and he was brilliant. He's back in the Calder Cup final. I do believe that Chris Drieger is an NHL goaltender, and I think some team is going to, you know, probably present an opportunity. And who knows? Maybe he'd look at it like, hey, I can beat these guys out, and this is my opportunity. But that's a name I would consider if he was an option. Kevin Lankinen, I believe, is, you know, he's 29 already. But statistically, some of the underlying numbers the last couple of years, like, he's ready to pop as well. He has been in that sort of top 15 range in adjusted save percentage two straight years. Again, probably ready for more of a guaranteed NHL. Like, to me, he's a buy-low opportunity. What I'm looking for here, 3 years ago, or I guess it's two summers ago now, when the Washington Capitals signed Charlie Lindgren for 3 years at $1.3 million, I said at the time that we would look back at it as the best signing of that summer. And these are the types of names I'm looking at. What I don't know is whether you can attract that without offering an opportunity to play in the National League. So it's harder to find that guy if you're telling him for sure he's starting in the American League. If you've got the temptation or the possibility of passing somebody, it's a little easier to find them. And they are out there. And I'm curious to see which way Calgary goes and sort of when that market opens on July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
But there are guys. And like I said, like you mentioned one in Drieger, Lankinen for sure, another one I'd look at. Eric Comrie would be interesting as well, although I think he's going to try and find an NHL opportunity. There's a guy that the lowest expected save percentage for two straight seasons in the entire league by like leaps and bounds. Like I think his expected in Buffalo last year, heading into his final start was in the 850s. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you do. If that's the environment you're playing behind, you're going to look, it's just going to look terrible for you. So that's another guy that I think has more upside than we've seen in the National League. And like I said, there's a handful, there's a list, and it all depends what pool you're shopping out of. The pool that is willing to be starting in the American League or the pool that sees itself as needing an NHL opportunity.
Kevin Woodley's with us, NHL.com, In Goal Magazine. He's our goaltending expert, and we couldn't have you on and not ask about the Stanley Cup Final before we're done. What have your observations been of, through the first three games, the unbeatable Sergei Bobrovsky, and the last two games, maybe the armor seems a little bit more easy to get through. Your thoughts on the last two games or the first five games of the Stanley Cup Final from Sergei Bobrovsky's standpoint?
Okay, so I'm going to one quick pause before that because there was a name I wanted to put on this list that I haven't yet. Devin Cooley.
Okay.
Late bloomer, sleeper, learned a lot of things in San Jose last year. I know there were some games that ended up with crooked numbers, but we had him on the In Goal Radio podcast, and the amount of things that are new to him that allowed him to have the success when he when he did have it in the National Hockey League. Like, there's a guy that might be a classic late bloomer at 27, and he's a UFA, and I'm not sure San Jose sees an NHL spot for him. So he's another guy with his size and how things are, a lot of things that shouldn't be are new to him right now. I see him as another guy who might be willing to start in the American League and turn into a real project. In terms of Bob, honestly, like, his first three games of the Stanley Cup Final were like superhuman Bob. He was plus 5.34 goals above expected in three games. The entire Stanley Cup playoffs to that point, he was 5.5. Like, he pretty much was better in those three games than he was the entire playoffs to that point combined. Like, that's how good he, especially 1 and 3. It was the heater of all heaters. And so they hang a bunch on him in the 8-1 game, and everyone says, can he bounce back? I'm confident he can bounce back, but bouncing back to heater level, a level that, frankly, over a three-game stretch, he's only done a couple of times all season, that seemed unrealistic. And so I think what you got in Game 5 is a little bit more of both, sort of, this is Bob. And maybe even less so because of the McDavid goal from angle, where he kind of got caught behind a screen. Normally, that's a play he handles and gets to his knees in time to seal rather than getting caught standing up on that bank shot. But it is McDavid coming downhill at the bottom of the circle, and if you drop into a reverse, he might just put it by your ear. So, tough place. I also, within that, I think Edmonton, and I don't know how much this is them finally adjusting as they've seen the Panthers for a while, or finally listening to the pre-scout, because I know this stuff was in there. The Oilers are attacking his weaknesses. You look at Game 1 and all those breakaways, and everybody talked about all the breakaway saves. Well, they were all in tight. At no point did they sort of have a gap on a defender that allowed them to pull him laterally across the crease. But there was only one situation like that. I'm trying to remember who had the breakaway. But you could see Bob had already loaded up for a poke check on it. I think it was Henrique, and he tried to go back against the grain, short side, backhand. And Bob had already loaded up a poke check for that. You could see his hand drop on it. If you can string him out laterally on those, he doesn't get back to his post. So you see exactly what Connor Brown did is exactly how you would write it up. They've gained confidence that they can score from a distance. Game 2, I felt they were trying to be perfect, especially on the power play. Everything down low, trying to create backdoor tap-ins. Well, guess what? Even if you do it, you're playing to his strengths. That's where he's at his best. Mid-zone, high-zone, open looks, shoot pucks. Funnel pucks off to the side of the net when you get him to commit at the top of the crease. These things were all in the pre-scout, and they were all things they didn't do nearly enough of in games 1 through 3. They're doing more of it now, and that combined with him coming back to earth has us where we are now. Now, the downside, if you're an Oilers fan, we're all supposed to be cheering, right, as Canadians. I think that's what Boston Pizza told me.
I don't know.
Not in Calgary. I got to remember, I'm talking in Calgary. I get it. Not in Vancouver either, I'll tell you that. But The downside for the Oilers fans that are Oilers fans is he only needs to find the level he showed in 1-3 one more time. But he's running out of chances, right? So I'm curious to see the way this goes. I didn't think he was terrible by any stretch in Game 5 outside of just getting caught on the McDavid bank shot. And I think that is what I expect of Bob, just slightly above expected results. And the question will be, can the Panthers get back to a level where that's enough, where they don't need, you know, Superman Bob to win a game like they did in 1-3.
What's your, just before we let you go, what's your gut about Game 6 telling you?
I'm not normally somebody who believes in momentum, especially from game to game when you've got 2 days off, but confidence, the Oilers have it. They've discovered it. They figured out not how to beat Bob, but they figured out that if they play a certain way and attempt certain chances, they have a chance to beat him. After game one, I was worried they would feel like they had to make the perfect play. And for a while, it looked like they were trying to, and that's not necessarily how you score on him. So you combine that with clearly confidence in Stuart Skinner rising at this point. And maybe this is just a selfish hockey fan. I don't have a dog in this fight. I have people I know and respect very much on both sides that I would be happy for if they get it across the finish line. As a hockey fan, I just want more of it because that was a hell of a game the other night. And I would like two more. I would like to watch two more.
Yeah, I feel you. I don't agree, but I feel you.
You guys are like Canucks fans now. You're cheering for Luongo. You just want to see Luongo lift the cup, right? Like us.
It could be anybody. It really could be anybody wearing a jersey that's not the Oilers. And we're being petty. There's no doubt about, like, I will fully admit it is from a place of pettiness that it's coming from. But you know what?
We're unbiased. You can't do our job and walk into a locker room if you have any emotional attachment. We don't cheer for teams.
You cheer for people.
We cheer for great stories and great people. And I know plenty that would be both on either side.
I do as well. I would put myself in that same category and also just add cheer against the Oilers. That would be it. That would be the only caveat to it. I mostly joke, and that was a hell of a game in Game 5. There's no doubt about it. The atmosphere should be out of bounds Friday night in Edmonton for Game 6. Well, I know this for sure. The Stanley Cup Final will be over the next time we chat with you. Vickers and I are heading to the draft in Las Vegas on Thursday, so we'll catch up with you next week, my friend. As always, really appreciate the insight, and great to catch up with you as always, Kev. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, my pleasure. No draft for me next week, but I'll be in Honolulu, so we'll both be in better climates.
I guess you'll live not being at the draft, being in Honolulu. Enjoy!
I can make that exception this time.
Thanks, Kev. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys.
It's Kevin Woodley of NHL.com, In Goal Magazine, joining us here on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Brought to you by Atlas Pizza. Celebrate the summer soccer spectacle from around the world and cheer on your favorite country on the big screens at Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast at Steinberg and Vickers, along with you this hour on Flames Talk. Speaking of the NHL draft, yes, Flames Talk will be on location in Vegas. We will be all over Las Vegas, Nevada on the Strip. I don't even know where we're going to be come draft day. I really am skeptical that they're going to be able to fit the media risers into the sphere, but we'll see. I don't know exactly where we're going to be, but I do know that we'll have full coverage from Vegas. I also know the WestJet strike situation has been figured out for the time being, so don't have to worry about getting stranded here or there. So that's also good news. And we have got four great sponsors with our coverage from the NHL draft in Vegas, and some of our absolute favorites from All Kind Door Services Limited, who have been on board with the Brent Cron hit on the big show all year long, Atlas Pizza, Calgary Lock and Safe, and our friends at Adrenaline Source for Sports. Their second location is opening soon at Northland Village Mall.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
This Thursday edition of the program continues. Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio. So, full disclosure, Wednesday was so dialed on. It's the first time I used that word, by the way, you jerks. Speaking to Shan and Cam, who I know their eyes lit up as soon as I said it. Yesterday was so focused on the Jacob Markstrom trade with the New Jersey Devils that anything else kind of got lost in the shuffle, especially on a show called Flames Talk. We had Dan Marr of NHL Central Scouting scheduled to join us. It was the only day he could join us this week. The director of NHL Scouting the week before the NHL draft didn't make Wednesday's podcast. I wanted to make sure it got to you on the podcast, and if you didn't listen to it, hear it live on Wednesday, that it didn't get lost in the shuffle. Dan Marr's been the director of NHL Central Scouting for the last decade plus. He does a great job of breaking down the draft, and he joined us on Wednesday's edition of Flames Talk. This is crazy time for you, hey? It's kind of hair on fire as you get towards the draft, I would imagine.
There's been a lot of follow-up from the combine, and there's still a lot of draft preparation going on with the agents and the teams, and we're kind of caught in the middle of it all.
What does go on? Like, what is Central Scouting's role? What are some of the duties that you and your group are working through as you move towards draft weekend?
Well, there's been some follow-up on the medical side. There's been follow-up on confirming some of the tests that were done. We're responsible with the NHL clubs to put together a pre-approved list of players that can be drafted, meaning their birth dates, nationality, et cetera, have all been confirmed and checked out, and those are the names that go into the draft system. But each club can submit additional names, and those names go just into that club's own database for the draft if they want to draft somebody that's hasn't been already pre-approved. So this is a process where the teams, you know, everyone's very secretive. So
yeah,
we have to take our caution and be very security conscious that we obtain those names from the clubs, and we put them in that club's draft database, and then they're able to draft those players on draft day. And every year there's half a dozen or so players that get added that do get drafted. So it's an important process for the clubs, and it helps keep the draft moving along where you don't have unnecessary delays with teams trying to add a player into the system.
See, it's funny you bring that up. I've always wondered, having been, especially as you get into day two, I've always wondered how everything is so instantaneous when it shows up on the draft board, all that type of stuff. You just answered some of those questions, that is very neat to hear. Dan, let's dive in on this 2024 draft class. And, you know, whenever we have the opportunity to chat with you here in this market in Calgary, a lot of excitement because the Flames have a pair of first round picks in the 2024 draft. I always ask you kind of like, how do you evaluate, how do you classify this year's draft when it comes to talent and types of players and all that type of stuff? It's a very motherhood overarching statement, but how do you evaluate the class of 2024?
Well, scouts are a unique lot. They like to label draft classes. And I can tell you at the start of the year here, the consensus was that it wasn't going to be a very deep draft as far as, you know, what you consider surefire type NHL prospects. It wasn't thought to be that deep, but as the season has moved along, particularly in the second half, I would say there's been a lot of players that have really upped their stock to where now you're saying everyone knows good player, top NHL prospect in the first round. Now we're talking to where we're into like the, you know, 55, 60 players here are really solid prospects. So anyone that has picked in the top three rounds, they're going to be able to stock up the reserve list with some talented prospects.
Has it been, for your group, consensus from start to finish that Macklin Celebrini is the number one prospect here?
At the very start, it wasn't. There were other names in the mix. But we tend to, our scouting, we scout towards our grades. So at the beginning of the year, we focus on the A prospects that we've identified going into the season, and he quickly established himself that he was not only the front runner, but probably the leader of the pack. But then other guys like Lefshunov and Boom came up into the mix rather quickly. We already knew about the Zane Pereks and Caden Lindstrom from the summertime, Demidov from Russia, Helenius from Finland, Juracek. These players were kind of well-known at the start, and we went around and saw them all, but Celebrini just popped away. When you're that young of an age, playing at a higher level against older players all the way along, yet being one of the better players and one of the more impactful players, it's pretty impressive.
What is the central scouting report on Macklin Celebrini?
Well, he's a pretty complete package as far as skills and smarts go. But what makes him stand out is the composure and the calm, cool, collected way he sees the ice and make plays. And he thrives under pressure. He seems to just take his... He doesn't take his game up a level, but he just kind of bears down and goes out there, and he does kind of what Connor McDavid has been doing the last couple of games there. He just kind of takes charge when somebody needs to take charge on the play, and he gets the job done. So those are special players that don't come along all that often, and he's really proven himself, just his composure. He's got that in spades.
So that's the first overall selection. I mean, essentially Mike Greer confirmed that when the Sharks won the draft lottery. We all know where Macklin Celebrini is going to go. We're chatting with Dan Marr, the director of NHL Central Scouting. Here in this market, everybody talks about Tiija Ginla. And I need to ask, you know, we've had different scouts on, different services on, giving their opinions. NHL Central Scouting is as robust a scouting outfit as there is. Tell us about Tiija Ginla, Dan, and give us your thoughts on what makes him such an intriguing player.
Well, Tiija is a player, you know, with his history. We didn't get to see a lot of ice time with him when he's with Seattle. The move to Kelowna put him in a different situation where once he got the ice time, he got going, and he's a pretty exciting player to watch. Scouts love it when you go to a game, you don't have to look for a player. He just pops out at you. And this is the style of play that he has. He's very proactive and dynamic. He wants the puck. He takes it to the net. He sets up chances. He wants to score. He wants the puck on his stick. These are the type of players that you really, really like. And he just got better and better as the season went on. And you could see the confidence kind of taken over there. And the Ginla DNA is well known in the Calgary market there. And this is someone he's grown up around the game. He knows what it takes. He proved how good an athlete he was at the combine with the testing. And when you talk to him, like he's just a ready-made pro. Now, he's still a teenager, so I'm not going to start projecting when he's going to get to the NHL. But he has all the NHL skills and attributes to be a very successful player for a long, long time.
How much did he rise in your books? How much of a vault up your rankings and just your overall impressions of him? How much of a riser was he?
At midterm, we had him at 11, and he went to 9. And like I said, these kids really impacted and showed themselves. So it was tough to make these moves with the players. And with him, we have him at 9 right now, but you need to always keep in mind Central Scouting's list. It's our mandate to provide the list prior to the draft lottery, and it's done basically right after the season ends. So it doesn't account for any playoff hockey, any U18 or Memorial Cup participation. So, like, we have TJ at 9, but I'll be honest with you, if he was to go in the top 5, I don't think it would surprise anybody. Like, he really, at the interviews, at the combine, with the testing and that, you know, if anybody needed to confirm anything, it was confirmed. So I can see a team stepping up for him or even moving up for him if this is the type of player they're looking to bring into their organization.
Dan Marr is the director of NHL Central Scouting, joining us here on Flames Talk on this Wednesday afternoon. Aaron?
Dan, NHL team draft lists will vary wildly at the best of times. How unpredictable does this NHL draft feel, particularly in that top 10, top 15 range for you?
Well, I always say it in the sense that a lot of the teams in the top, I'm going to say top 5 or 6, well, top 5 for sure, they got a good chance of getting the guy that they have ranked 1 or 2 on their overall list. Because the defensemen in this group, they're all different, but they all will have an impact down the road in the NHL, but they all bring a different style. So it depends on what a team's looking for, how they value that, and how they rank them in their order. Because the teams in the first round, they're going to stick to the order of their list. That they have a best player available philosophy. There's a lot of speculation and a lot of talk, but for the most part, I think teams stick to that format. And like this year, like we moved a player like Michael Hage up quite a bit.
Yep.
But then we had a player like Cole Eisenman. It was hard. He went from, I think, 8 to 12, but he could definitely be a top 10 player. He had an outstanding U18 World Championships. Beckett Seneca from Oshawa is another player. We bumped him from 15 to 13, but it's hard to move these guys around very much. They're all in that mix. So, you know, when you get talking, like, you know, from 8 down to 16, 17, it's going to be all over the place. It's like dropping the marbles and see which way they scatter. But the teams, like I said, they're going to follow their order, and they're going to come away happy getting a player that they really want to add to their roster.
I want to touch on something that you said there in terms of the ledges and from 8 to 15 or 16 being like dropping some marbles and seeing where they end up. Where do you see the ledges in this draft? Clearly it's going to be Macklin, Celebrini sort of by himself, and then do you have like a grouping from 2 to 7, or how do you see that sort of section of the draft playing out in terms of where the quality of talent is?
I think the teams, there would be a consensus maybe on who the top 7 or 8 might be. And I'm not saying that there are the top 7 or 8 that we have, because, you know, we have to factor in on the European side.
Right.
So I think overall, like the top 10 aren't going to vary too much. It's just in that next range where there's such a variety of players available in the different positions. It's like a smorgasbord buffet. You're going to go in there and be able to choose and select what you're comfortable with and what you like. I think a lot of teams, they'll craft their list to fill their draft philosophy and the type of players they want in the organization. And sometimes it's focused on what their needs are. And they'll be able to slot a lot of these players because, you know, as you get looking in the second half of the first round, there's a lot of interesting players there. And that order as well will be all over the place. What I always find interesting is the first day ends, 32 players are off the board, and teams are looking at their list, and they've got some guys left that are, you know, in their early teens on their list sometimes. So then the second day, those first few picks at the top of the second round become valuable. And I know there's a lot of conversations taking place, like, you know, how can we move up to get this guy? We can get a first rounder early in the second round. And there, I think this year the trade talk will be pretty extensive when it comes to moving a pick just to move up to pick a player that a lot of teams didn't think would still be there when it's their turn.
you mentioned, of course, the philosophy for teams in the first round, particularly in the top 10-ish range, best player available, that's going to be the mandate. You're going to stick to the list. But if you're a team that needs a defenseman and are picking in the top 10, when you look at Levshinov, Buyum, Parekh, Dickinson, all in the top 7 among North American skaters, and then Saleyev and Juracek in the top 4 among international skaters, how excited would you be if you're a team that is hoping to add a top-flight defenseman in this draft?
Well, I think the teams would be very excited because this is the draft class to where you can make that pick that can make a difference for your team down the road. Like I said, it's rare where you get so many different types of defensemen available at this caliber. So a lot of teams, I know teams know what they want, and they're going to have their list orchestrated that way. But they're going to come away with a player that they think that they're going to be able to utilize in their organization. And it'll be somebody they might be able to build around for a while.
Dan, I know it is a crazy time for you right now. So we really appreciate the time today. Really appreciate getting a little bit of an opportunity to dive in on this draft class. Good luck with the rest of your draft prep. And thanks for spending 15 minutes with us today. Really appreciate it. Hey,
all the best.
That is Dan Marr. He is the director of NHL Central Scouting. Full disclosure, he joined us on Wednesday's Flames Talk. Here we are on Thursday. But it unfortunately got lost in the shuffle of all of the Jacob Markstrom hubbub. And because that was the only day he could join us, didn't make the podcast on Wednesday. Wanted to make sure you got some ears on it because he's the director of NHL Central Scouting and knows this draft class inside and out, and thought it'd be really good to make sure it made it on the podcast just because the draft is next week and the Flames have a bunch of picks. So wanted to make sure that we got that on there for you. He joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Celebrate the summer soccer spectacle from around the world and cheer on your favorite country on the big screens at Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, 6060 Memorial Drive North. As we start to wrap up this hour, Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg as we wrap up this Thursday hour and we wrap up the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. When it comes to your business, knowing your property is secure is better than wondering who's getting in. Get peace of mind at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.